To Data, warp speed, please.
Hour 21 on the Trekmate Podathon.
Yes, we are back, and that is hour 21. Oh, I thought we'd never get here. It's amazing. It really, really is. Are you guys still muted?
Yes.
Yeah, just a second.
Yeah, it has. It's gone really, really quick.
And, yep, and I'm still alive.
We're just about coping, so... So I suppose it's time to get Matt Warrick on the show. Matt, I haven't got you on Skype. Could you please send us a invite? Otherwise, I can't add you.
Yeah.
He is online. He's on my Skype, so but I can't add him because you're hosting the call. So.
Okay. How about you put it in our Skype, his username? Not at him quickly. We were so much more polished about 12 hours ago.
We were.
Yeah.
I'm just sending you his name. I just had to find out his name.
Cool. Add contacts. This is gripping. Gripping, people, gripping.
Thrilling podcasting.
Okay, then. Okay, that is sent. So, remember, guys, anyone who wants to win an evening with Mr. Drinkwater, please get donating now. Any little bit is worth it. Though, please, just get donating. Okay.
There was no obligation for any shenanigans.
Yeah, no shenanigans. Unless requested.
Unless requested, hello. Yes.
Hello,
so, Matt.
Hello. I thought Mark was going to be calling me. That's why I never added you. So,
don't worry.
Yeah, that's fine.
So,
how are you doing, Matt? Are you going to drop off now, Wayne?
Why not? I'll drop off for a little while, and I'll be back at some point soon.
Okay. Cool. All right. We'll see you soon, mate. Okay. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
It's no problem.
Yeah,
how are you feeling? Are you up for the last 4 hours?
I'm not feeling too bad. I did struggle a little earlier on today. It was quite tough getting up at 7:30 this morning, having had just 3.5 hours sleep. But I sort of picked up and then dropped off again, and I have just picked up a little bit again, so not too bad, mate. How long have you been listening? You listened for quite a few hours last night, I think, didn't you?
I stayed up until about 12:30, 1 o'clock last night, and then I woke up at about 10 this morning.
Okay.
I did have about eight hours sleep, so I'm fine.
You're fine. Oh, well, that's good. That's good. So thanks for joining us anyway. So why don't you give us a little bit of a story about your Trek background?
Right, well, my Trek background is I've been a sci-fi fan for as long as I can remember. I got into Trek when the BBC started showing it in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was about 19 years old. Yeah. And I've been following it ever since. Went back and watched the original series, and stuck for everything and all the movies.
And you're a particular fan of soundtracks, though, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I mean, any movie soundtrack, generally orchestral stuff. So all the Star Trek movies, obviously. Most sci-fi movies, things like Star Wars, Stargate, Independence Day, big bombastic things like, you know, John Williams and people like that. I just love that.
Excellent, excellent. So you've got 19 music clips we have here, so we'll do our best to...
we're going to have to rush through the film of it, I think.
Yeah, we will have to rush.
5 minutes worth, so we should have enough time to have
We should just about have enough time to put them on. And right, so are these in any particular order, Matt? Which one would you like me to play first? We'll play the clip, and then you can...
Yeah,
you agree we can have a little bit of a chat about it.
Yeah, we'll do it in chronological order. So people who are listening live might think, well, why has he chosen some of those? I wanted to try and mix things up a bit, choose things that people haven't heard before, because I know you've mentioned the Amok Time music a few times in the last 20 hours. I'm not going to choose that, because everyone's heard that to death. So we'll go through it from the beginning. So let's start with the original series. Just a bit of background. Most of the episodes of the original series were written by three guys. Alexander Courage, who obviously did the sent the theme, Fred Steiner, and Gerald Fried, I believe his surname is pronounced. But there is a lot of reuse of music in the series, as you were, I heard you discussing this a bit last night. But in series one, if just to give you an example, of the 26 episodes that were in series one, 14 of them from other episodes, which is, you know, quite a lot. So, yeah.
Okay. So which clip is this? Is this
let's listen to some music from one of the first episodes. So let's go for Time Reversal and Future Risk from The Naked Time.
Yep, let's go for that. Okay, nice little clip there, Matt, and that's from Amok Time. Sorry, The Naked Time, isn't
Naked
it?
Naked Time, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much a piece in two parts, really. The first part is pretty typical of any sci-fi or action show from the 60s. I mean, if you were to watch, I don't know, The Time Tunnel or Land of the Giants or Mission Impossible.
I used to love Time Tunnel,
like,
yeah.
Oh, Time Tunnel was brilliant.
That was a classic
Channel
show.
4 on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Wonderful. But yeah, I mean, but if you wouldn't know that was Star Trek music, apart from the ending, which is obviously using the Star Trek fanfare, you know, so it's definitely a typical piece of early Star Trek music. So
yeah, I really like the bit at the beginning. So that is the time reverse bit, literally where they're going back through time, and it's got this sort of spiraling thing going on, as if they are sort of rolling backwards through time,
chronometers running backwards, and all that.
Yeah, you can really. It really fits that scene, I think, doesn't it? You can
just imagine
that they are spiralling out of control. It's a really nice bit of music, that.
Right, the second bit we've got, then, is from The Trouble with Tribbles. Now, I'll just read something here from the liner notes from the album that this was on before we play it. This was written by Jerry Fielding, and it says, "The amusing tribble motif is heard whenever you see a room full of the little furballs or when Captain Kirk is about to sit on one. This effect was achieved by dubbing trombone overlays into the tracks at twice normal speed." So you'll hear that in this track, where it's the sound that, when you hear it, you definitely associate that with a tribble.
Great. Let's give that a listen. Thank you. That's a really classic scene. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. That first bit is used in so many TOS episodes. You know, when there's a light-hearted comedy moment, but I just love it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and I never really noticed it before, but yes, you can hear the. Did you say trombones?
Yes.
Up there with double speed, yeah. I would never have really noticed that. I wouldn't have
picked that up. I was reading the notes.
But when you say it and you listen to it, it's like, oh yeah, of course, yeah, you can see they've put that through, but it's a really nice effect, you know, just something so simple.
Right, so, a couple of other points then, just to before we move on to the movies. Obviously, La La Land are bringing out their 14 CD set or whatever it is.
That's going to be huge, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there's so many episodes that had music written that never got used, and I just can't wait to hear that and see what could the episodes have sounded like. I'm sure there are a lot of videos, especially for some of the next-gen stuff that got released on YouTube, where people have put the unused music to the episode, so I'll imagine there'll be quite a lot of that happening. So.
Oh, that'll be really interesting. So I imagine that's going to be quite a pricey box set, but I think that'll be really interesting there.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, I'll probably buy it online rather than getting the physical copy because most of my music is digital. That's one of the big things. I mean, the advent of digital downloads has made it a lot easier to get hold of soundtrack albums because there's not massive mass market appeal for them.
Yes, quite. So it's not always worth them physically creating the discs and packaging and shipping them, etc., because they're not going to make... You know, that cuts into their profit, doesn't it? Whereas digital downloads, there's a lot more profit to be had there.
I mean, La La Land are very good because that's obviously that's what they do. They release just soundtrack albums. So I've bought quite a few from them from like various films and TV shows. But I mean, some of the other companies that do that, like Intrada, do a lot of the movies, and it's just easier to buy them through iTunes or Amazon.
Yeah, cool.
Right, let's go to the movies then. So, the first movie is obviously the motion picture. Now, your thoughts on this movie, Mark, what do you generally think of it?
Of the motion picture?
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit too long.
Yeah.
It's probably about 20 to 25 minutes, something like a little bit too long. It does go on a little bit. But I do actually quite like it. I think it's a very stylishly done movie. It's very different to everything that followed. And I know it's not always popular, and you know, a lot of people would say, well, it wasn't really good, so that's why they changed the formula. But I do quite like it. A little bit long, does go on a bit. Especially some of those Enterprise flyby scenes, which do seem to take about 15, 20 minutes each.
Yeah.
But overall, I do enjoy it. It's a hell of a lot better than Star Trek V.
Yes, well, we'll get to that in due course. so the space flybys... It's very fitting that you should mention that because obviously the main theme in the motion picture is the introduction of the theme which would later go on to be the theme to the Next Generation, which obviously Jerry Goldsmith wrote, and he would use that in all of his subsequent Star Trek movies. Now, what a few people may not know is that what we hear in the film isn't what he originally wrote, and originally the Star Trek theme was going to sound a little bit different. Now, what I've done here is the musical clip we're about to hear is in two parts. The first is the original unused bit of score. Then there's a small interview section with Jerry Goldsmith in the middle that I've got from the special edition DVD. And then after that, you can hear exactly the same bit, but the final movie version. This is from the first time we see the Enterprise. And it's a brilliant piece of music. So, Mark, go ahead.
Let's... Have a listen.
Thank you. it's so exciting. You hear music coming alive with an orchestra, a big orchestra on a scoring stage, and everybody gets thrilled and excited and all that. And Bob was mildly, he smiled, and the scene of the flying up to the Enterprise was a big bombastic piece, and it was, we all thought it was so wonderful. And to finish the sessions, and I'm patting myself on the back, and everybody's patting, it's great and all that. And
Bob grabbed me, pulled me out in the hallway, we walked down the hall, I said, well, what do you think? And I could never lie to Bob. I couldn't get away with it even if I wanted to. I mean, it's impossible. So I said, I think it sounds like, you know, sailing ships. And he says, well, I think it sounds like Conestoga wagons. What do we do?
And he couldn't really articulate what was bothering him. He instinctually knew what was bothering him, but he couldn't say what was bothering him. So I said, we've got to do that all over again. And so I was crushed. I said, well, what's bothering you? And he finally said, there's no theme. And I started thinking, theme? Oh, it was a love theme. I'd written a love theme. That was, but I mean, there was no Star Trek theme. And I said, oh. He'd come over to the house. He had a bad day of the special effects. And he says, I've had a really bad day today. He says, nothing's working right. I hope you got good news for me.
Absolutely fantastic. I love that music.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean that,
you can hear the TNG theme in it, but this is so much better, I think. I mean, I do enjoy the TNG theme, but this is just so much more orchestral. It really, really is fantastic. And I love the music of Jerry Goldsmith. I mean, it's just awesome. You know, as I said earlier, I've got the First Contact theme as my ringtone on my phone, and I miss a lot of phone calls because I'm just like, oh, I like this bit, I'm just going to, oh, and the person hangs up because I listen to it a lot. So I just love it every time my phone goes off that theme plays.
Yeah, I mean, it really shaped the mould for the future of Star Trek music in general. And what you say about it sounding more orchestral is exactly what it is, because obviously the budget that they have for a film is much greater than they have for a TV show, so they can get more musicians in. So, yeah. But I think it's definitely up there with one of my favourite all-time movie themes, without a doubt.
Yeah, I really do like the music in the motion picture. It's very majestic, and it's there are several themes throughout Star Trek. Whenever you hear them, you can just picture the scenes in your head. That's all you need is the music, and you can picture exactly what's happening on screen.
Yeah, he introduced lots of themes in the, obviously because it was the first one, but he introduced themes that would then go on to be used in other ways, like the Klingon theme that he introduced right at the beginning of this movie, then ended up in First Contact and Insurrection, becoming the theme that played whenever Worf was on screen. Yeah. So, you know, it just paved the way.
Yeah, iconic music.
Yes, definitely. Right, okay. Let's move on then. The next, I'm grouping the next two movies together. So The Wrath of Khan and The Search for Spock. They effectively can be viewed as one movie because the storyline obviously just follows on from one to the other.
Yes.
But also because they kept the same composer, that reinforces that whole sense. And obviously, Jerry Goldsmith was by this time too expensive for them to afford because obviously after how much the motion picture cost, they decided to decrease the budget for the next few movies.
Yeah, that was ludicrously expensive. I think that was the most expensive yeah. movie of all time. At the time, I believe it was the most expensive movie ever made.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me at all. And I don't
think
they break
that record all of the time now, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so they couldn't afford Jerry Goldsmith, so they went with James Horner, who actually, for my mind, is every bit as good as Jerry Goldsmith. And the music of the films that he does, just reinforces that in my mind. He does some fantastic tracks in these two films, but we haven't got time to play my favourite ones, because my favourite ones are the battle in the Mutara Nebula in Wrath of Khan, which is 8 minutes long, and in Search for Spock, the Stealing the Enterprise theme, which is what plays when they're stealing it from space dock, at 9 minutes long. And, we wouldn't have time to chat about anything else if we played those. So I've gone for something which still gives you the theme of that music that he wrote, and this is from The Wrath of Khan, and it's The Enterprise Clears Moorings.
Well, let's give that a listen.
Thank you.
Awesome. Absolutely fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah, it's so iconically Wrath of Khan, isn't it?
It is, and it's funny, the most of the scenes that music is set to are just ripped straight out of the motion picture where the Enterprise is leaving, you know, dry dock. And because obviously they just reuse a lot of the special effects. And it's funny that even the same thing set to different music, it just gives you a completely different sense of what the film is all about.
Yeah. Great track. Absolutely. Fantastic. And I think, like you said, every bit as good as anything Jerry Goldsmith did.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's great music in that movie.
Yeah. Right, after the Search for Spock then, we had The Voyage Home. Now, obviously, this was a bit of a different musical direction for the franchise generally.
Yes, yes, it was.
Nimoy got his friend Leonard Rosenman to do this the score for this movie. Originally, Nimoy actually wanted him to do Search for Spock as well, but I'm glad that he didn't, because obviously, with the two films being so interlinked, I think the musical continuity between two and three was a good thing to have. Leonard Rosenman, completely different style of music. Fits the movie, definitely, because it's obviously very more comedic and upbeat.
Yeah.
And generally very 80s, especially the bit, you know, where they're crossing the road and double the mass on you and all that.
Yes.
It's just brilliant. But the bit we're going to play today is called Hospital Chase, and it's obviously from the scene where Kirk, McCoy and Dr... Gillian, I forget her name there.
Taylor, Dr. Gillian Taylor.
They rescue Chekhov from the hospital. Now, Rosenman himself described this as being like circus music, so see if you agree with him.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It is circus-like. It's very 80s as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very, very 80s. It reminded me almost of some of the music in Trading Places.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd comedy. Just a few little bits on that just is reminiscent. But as you said, very, very different direction for a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I think 4 is probably one of the weaker ones. But that's not to detract anything from it. It's written for the type of movie that it is, and although I love Star Trek IV, I think that music is definitely one of the weaker scores. And the theme especially, I'm not massively keen on the theme, but it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Right, now we move on to my passion, which is TNG, as Wayne discovered. Now obviously, some of the music in this... I've moved away from choosing some clips mainly because I will be using them for future Stump the Quizmaster questions. So I tried to be a bit careful. So some of them are bits that I've used, but obviously previously, but in their entirety, so people can hear them as they are. So you can't start talking about TNG without discussing the main theme. Obviously, that's the Goldsmith movie theme from the motion picture.
Yes.
Now there are three versions that are in use. Over the run of TNG, you've got the first season one, which for me is horrendous. I can't listen to that music. It just sounds wrong. Do you know what I mean? It sounds like it wasn't correctly.
Yeah.
Season two is my favourite one. It's the most bombastic and you know of them all. And three, I think it sounds a bit soft. So most of the soundtrack albums have the season 3 theme on them, but there's a couple out there that have two, and so here's a chance for some people to hear it if they've never heard it before without any of the sound effects on.
Excellent. Let's give it a go.
Yeah,
absolutely love that.
Yeah,
I've always liked the TNG music because I grew up with TNG.
Yeah, exactly.
But that probably is the best version. I hadn't actually noticed this until recently. But you are right, there are differences between the seasons, and that I know what you mean about it being the most sort of bombastic. It's the most sort of it's got the most oomph. It's got the most oomph to it.
It's got the most va-va-voom.
Yes.
So that's the TNG theme. But something that a lot of people don't know, and I know you didn't notice until I tweeted it to
yes,
you.
Yes, I wasn't aware of this. I'd never heard it.
Yeah, the original theme was actually intended to be something different. Now, Dennis McCarthy, who composed the episode 4 Encounter at Farpoint, did write and record an alternative theme, which Gene Roddenberry didn't like, so he decided to bring in the music from the motion picture. This music is—it's different. It could have been 7 years of hearing this on your TV screens.
Yes.
And go ahead and play that name off.
Yes, well, I think that's probably caused a few. I've seen a few things in the chat room. It's very Galaxy Quest.
Yes,
or,
it is. Right,
or something like Buck Rogers.
Yeah, I mean, I can see what he's tried to do. They've obviously said, right, we need a Star Trek theme. We want it to sound a bit like the motion picture theme, but not the same. And he's gone. Oh. Okay, this is what I'll write. And even though they didn't use that, if you listen to the score of Encounter at Farpoint and quite a few season 1 and season 2 episodes that Dennis McCarthy scored, you will hear bits of that in it, especially the dun, 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 yeah. that crops up time again. So yeah.
Yeah, an interesting one. I mean, it's not an awful piece of music, but...
No, not at all.
You just can't imagine it as being Star Trek. You know, we all know the TNG theme, and you hear that, and you think, oh my God, that could have been the theme. Just doesn't quite sound right. Especially when you say, well, there's the video on YouTube that you tweeted to me, and you can watch the titles with this laid over the top, and it's just like, oh no, this is just wrong.
But an interesting piece
of music.
No, without a doubt, and it just shows you what could have been. Right, so sticking with TNG, the next few bits we'll play are all by the same composer. Now, this is a guy called Ron Jones, and for my mind, he was the best composer that I had working on TNG. His music is very distinctive. He liked building up themes in episodes and reusing them for different sections of the episode to you know, give you an emotional response or something like that. Unfortunately, he was sacked halfway through the fourth season because Rick Berman didn't really like the type of music that he was making. He preferred, well, what goes on the internet is being called sonic wallpaper is what Rick Berman apparently preferred, music that was a bit more muted and didn't really overpower the scenes that you were watching.
Yes.
Personally, I preferred the style of Ron's music that he wrote, but, you know, each to their own, I suppose. Ron... He did write themes and then reuse them in later episodes. For example, recently on Stump the Quizmaster, you had a theme from The Neutral Zone, which was his Romulan theme. And he uses that in episodes later on that he wrote. So Data's Day with the Vulcan Ambassador, who turned out to be a Romulan, and The Defector with Admiral Jarok. Those themes can be heard throughout those episodes. We're not going to play them now because we don't have enough time. Another fact about Ron, sometimes he was asked to rewrite music, or when he couldn't do that, they just reused music that he'd written previously. Which brings us on to music from two episodes, which again has been used in Stunt Quizmaster. It's from Where Silence Has Lease and The Booby Trap. Now, originally in Where Silence Has Lease, this music was used for the section where Picard and Riker are on the self-destruct sequence, and then... afterwards, later in the episode, where they're escaping from the Gielan, the bit where Riker goes, "Yes, I do indeed concur."
Wholeheartedly. A simple yes would have sufficed, number one. Yes.
But they reused that in Booby Trap. What they did is they took those two pieces of music together and then they used them in the section where Picard pilots the Enterprise out of the asteroid field.
Yeah.
Bit of music he originally wrote, I think, was a bit too upbeat, and if you listen to the music in that episode generally, you'll hear like trumpet flares going on. He used that a lot in that piece of music, but I just think they didn't like it. So the music you're about to hear now is those two bits of music together. So it was used in Where Silence Has Lease and Booby Trap.
Okay, let's give it a listen.
Thank you.
Yeah, some great pieces of music there.
Yeah,
very distinctive.
Yeah, it's a testament to him as a composer that two different episodes can use the same music and it sounds perfectly fine in both of them for two completely different, you know, types of scene. And that was called two parts. The first part was called Fatal Decision. So obviously they were making a fatal decision to
destroy the ship.
Initiate self-destruct. Yeah, and this one is just called Self-Destruct, so it's fairly self-explanatory. Right, the next one is from an episode that a few people in the chat room are probably going to go, oh. And personally, I don't mind this episode. And I know
We had a chat about this yesterday on Skype, didn't we?
Yeah. I'll read the bit from the liner notes and excuse me, and then that'll tell you what episode it's from, presumably. So see if anyone in the chat can get it before we name it. Jones took the opportunity to write a pastiche of cheesy Vegas band scoring, the sort of format-breaking move that would be unthinkable during the show's later years. On that one, they came in and said, "This show sucks, Ron. What are you going to do with it?" Jones recorded in 1992. They didn't even care what I'd do with it. They just knew Ron's going to do something different. That was the one time they said, "Thank God Ron's here." So you want to play that, Mark?
Yeah, let's give this one a listen.
Go for it.
I really like that, and it is really cheesy, but I think it's really good fun. And a lot of people, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. A lot of people really slate this episode, but I quite enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. I mean, you know, like you say, the concepts on it are good. The way that they just look at this book and assume that's what the whole of humanity is like.
Yeah.
But like the whole fish out of water scenario as well, like Worf not knowing how a lift works and not understanding what a phone is and not knowing what room service is and things like that.
Yeah.
And the way it just gets into the swing of things is brilliant.
Yeah, I did enjoy that episode. I haven't watched it in a long time, so I think I'm going to... I'm going to probably have to wait for my TNG rewatch while I get the Blu-rays, but I'm really looking forward to seeing this one again.
Yeah. And the last piece of music we have is from a classic episode that everyone's going to recognise. It's from The Best of Both Worlds. Now, this was one of the last scores that Ron did, because obviously he was sacked not far into season 4. Just think, I mean, if Rick Berman had decided to get rid of him sooner, we'd never have had this music. And for my mind, this is probably one of the best musically scored TNG episodes. The music just accurately portrays the sense of doom that the Borg approaching. I love it.
Should we give that a listen?
Go for it. Thank you.
love it. And the last sort of 15 seconds or so are just so... I just love those bits. It's, you know,
yeah.
Tell Starfleet we have engaged the Borg. And
yeah,
I can just see that. That last sort of 15 seconds or so, absolutely brilliant.
Right,
it's hard to imagine that episode without that music in it.
No, I can't imagine it any other way. And, you know, so that's why I'm just so glad Ron composed it, because I think, you know, he's the only man who could have done it justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll leave TNG with another note from the project liner. So this is from the Ron Jones project, which is a massive collection of basically every single bit of music that Ron wrote, which is where I get most of the clips for Stump the Quizmaster on. So fundamentally, Jones's departure was due to creative differences. As Rick Berman solidified his control over Next Generation, turning it into a television phenomenon, his belief that music should be subtle and non-thematic resulted in Dennis McCarthy tapering down his own musical style to omit recurring melodies and unusual orchestrations. When Jay Chataway replaced Jones during the show's later years, he too followed Berman's directives and stripped out most of what had been his initial epic impression of space music, as heard in his first score, Tin Man. Film music fans were mystified how such obviously capable musicians would seemingly forget to write melodies, but McCarthy, Chataway and other guest and regular composers on TNG and its spin-off series were just following orders. So, basically it was, if you don't write the music the way we want you to, you're not getting paid and you won't be able to put food on the table. I think that was pretty much
if you don't write the music the way we want it written, you won't be writing the music.
Yeah. Right, let's jump back to the movies then.
Excellent.
So, The Final Frontier. Yeah, you said excellent there, and then we're going to Final Frontier, so...
not a great movie, but the score isn't too bad. There are some nice bits of music in that movie.
Yeah, obviously, this was Jerry Goldsmith's return to the franchise, and it's that, although the film's not brilliant, the music on it is fantastic. So, Goldsmith obviously took the opportunity in this film to expand most of the themes that he first came up with for the motion picture. So what we're going to hear now is something we talked a little bit about earlier. It's a piece of music called Target Practice, and it's a Klingon piece, because obviously the Klingons have a central role in this movie.
Yes, they do.
And it expands on the bit of music we first hear at the beginning of the motion picture. So, Mark, if you want to go ahead.
Sorry, we did have a few audio issues there, so I do apologise for that. But what I'll do, when this is released for download, I will actually replace it with the full-time clips. But that's a fantastic piece of music. It's very... It's like you've been stalked by a predator.
Yes, I think that's definitely what he was going for. I think, you know, the whole Klingon music is that Goldsmith wrote is very appropriate to the type of people that the Klingons are in the original movies.
Yes, but I love that. It's so Klingon and is just like it's Predator's music. Fantastic.
Yeah. Right, so moving on from Final Frontier, we then go to the to give a country. Now, this was scored by Cliff Eidelman, and it's a completely different style of music to the previous films. It's much more muted, darker. I'd imagine you like this, the music in this movie quite a lot, Mark, because you said to me you like the dark, you know, the more sinister type of music.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Originally, and this is a fact I dug up the other day, that Nicholas Meyer wanted to use Holst the Planets for the film as the music.
Oh, okay. That would have been cool. Yeah, I love those. Yeah.
Oh, I do, but I can't quite envision it in my head. But I'm sure there'll probably be some YouTube videos out there where people have mashed them together.
I bet there are. Yeah.
We're running short on time, Mark, so let's just play the music.
Yeah, let's do it. I do apologise again, audio issues. I think Mixler's having a little bit of a fit there, but I promise all of the music will be... I know we said we weren't going to edit much. We have had the odd bit of audio, audio problems here and there, but yeah, I will make sure that the music is there in all of its glory when this is available for download on Wednesday. But a great piece of music, though.
Yes, without a doubt, and it perfectly fits the atmosphere for the movie. A very dark, you know, movie.
Yeah, love it. Absolutely fantastic.
Right, let's quickly move on to DS9. Now, obviously, this is another one where La La Land are going to make a nice little set of music. There's been a couple of CDs of DS9 music. There's a CD of Emissary and a few tracks here and there. Personally, I don't know about you, but one of the big tunes I'm looking forward to is the music from Our Man Bashir. I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
The DS9 theme in, like, you know, jazzy. It'd be a bit like the Royale, I suppose, but...
Fantastic.
But the clip I've chosen is from, without a doubt, probably... It'll be in most people's top five episodes of DS9, I think. And it's from The Visitor, and it's a piece of music called Rainy Night.
Let's give it a listen. Brilliant, and so such a very emotional piece of music, and you know we are actually going to be reviewing this episode in the next couple of hours. It's a fan favourite for definite.
Yeah, without a doubt. Right, we'll skip Generations then because we're running low on time, but we're not really missing much because it's not a massively brilliant movie theme.
No.
Written by Dennis McCarthy, he decided not to use the Goldsmith theme, which I think was a mistake, but there you go. So the next franchise to come along was obviously Voyager. Now, Voyager, the style of music in Voyager is very similar to that of the later seasons of TNG and DS9 in general, mainly because, again, of Rick Berman and his influence. However, the piece of music I've chosen is from the episode Heroes and Demons, and it's the bit where the Doctor is in the holodeck, and it's called Dr. Schweitzer.
Yeah, let's give that a listen. It's a nice piece of music, that. It's not a brilliant episode. I'm not a big fan of Heroes and Demons, but I do like that music.
Yeah, and you can just see them all going, Schweitzer, Schweitzer, when that music is playing, you know. So, yeah. Like you say, it's not brilliant, but the music fits it very well. Right, now we're back onto the movies. So, First Contact, fantastic. Can't, you know, make any complaints about that movie. And the music is, you know, just as good to fit it perfectly, I think. Jonathan Frakes got Jerry Goldsmith back, so obviously he once again was able to build on his previous work from the previous movies, but he generated lots of new themes as well. A couple of people might not know, he actually scored this movie with his son Joel Goldsmith, who,
yes,
some people might know was the main composer on all of the Stargate TV shows, so SG-1, Atlantis and Universe. He became the main composer for that. But yeah, the music I've picked is from near the end of the film, where the Phoenix is making its maiden flight. And I think this is a fantastic piece of music, and it's called Flight of the Phoenix.
Yep, let's listen to that. great. I mean, the music in First Contact is just fabulous. I love it.
Yeah, it is. But I like that especially the way you hear the Star Trek theme start to come in when you can see the you know, the Phoenix about to go into warp for the first time. I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, we'll skip Insurrection. Again, that's Jerry Goldsmith. That's at his finest, but time is running short, so we'll give that one a miss. So the last Star Trek film we're going to go for, I'm not doing the new one because this is going to be like a continuation of it for the franchise. So the last film obviously was Nemesis, which was Goldsmith. And it was obviously one of the last two movies he scored before he died as well. So a bit disappointing that he wasn't with us for any longer. And in fact, his son Joel died not too long ago as well.
Yeah, so just a few months ago, wasn't it? Or earlier this year sometime, which is a great tragedy.
Big shame. But this piece of music is from Nemesis, so it's called Remembering Data and the Enterprise. So it's the scene at the end where they're all standing around having a drink of wine and remembering Data, and you see the Enterprise in dry dock. And if you listen to the bit of the Enterprise, you'll recognise that as partly being from the initial time we see the Enterprise in the motion picture. So it's a good symmetry to Goldsmith's work, you know, something from the first movie and something from the last movie he did linking together. So, yeah.
Let's give it a go. There we go. Very emotional bit of music. Very nice.
And it does. I think it's a very fitting end. Obviously, the main ending sequence has got part of Blue Skies in it, which I think is a nice little homage to Data as well, and obviously reinforcing the fact that he's still alive in B4 somehow. But yeah. So lastly, we get to Enterprise. Now, you can't talk about Enterprise without discussing the main theme, can you, Mark? What do you think about
it? A lot of people didn't like it. As a song, I like it. It was a controversial decision, I think, to have a theme, an actual song for a Star Trek series. But I think it worked, and I think the lyrics in it, I think they do sort of lend itself to the sort of spirit of Enterprise, you know, being that pioneering ship.
Yeah.
You know, the first one to go out there. So I like it.
Yeah, I do. I prefer the version they used in the first two seasons. I was okay with the second one.
Yeah.
But it was perfectly fine and lent itself well to that, you know, sort of we're getting out there for the first time. Can we do it kind of thing, you know? So, again, Enterprise written by the same group of guys, McCarthy, Chataway. They've got a lot more composers in. In fact, in total, they used 9 different composers over the full series run. But the bit we're going to choose is from the pilot, because it's one of the only ones that's been released. And it's actually called Archer's Theme, and you'd recognise it as what eventually became the closing credits music. So, Mark?
Yep, give it a go.
Thank you.
Sorry, it did balk out a little towards the end again. Yeah. But again, a very nice bit of music that. I do like the music in Enterprise.
Yeah, I'd say there's some excellent episodes. The Borg episodes have got some excellent music in it as well. I think in general the music in Enterprise is quite a bit more contemporary in some ways as well, because obviously it's set closer to our own time. So, I mean, like in that piece, there was a guitar used. You'd never have had that in Next Generation.
No.
Yeah. So we've reached the end of our little musical journey, Mark.
We have indeed. Now, my only regret is that we didn't have 2 hours for this. We put aside an hour. I think we could easily have filled 2 hours, because we didn't play everything there, and I'm sure you had hundreds of tracks. You could have easily filled 2 or 3 hours, I think, couldn't you?
I could have done an hour on Next Gen alone, to be honest with you, mate.
But that was absolutely fantastic, Matt. I really, really enjoyed that, and I think everyone listening did as well. We've had a lot of positive comments in the chat room there. So, as I said, apologies for the odd little bit of audio quality there, but when this is released on Wednesday, it will be with all of the music and all of its glory, so look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm sorry we've ran over a little bit as well.
That's okay, that's fine. I was loving that. So, thank you very much for joining us. I think Wayne and Paul are going to jump on now.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
That was superb.
Absolutely brilliant hour, Matt. You've done fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you enough for all the effort that you've put in. Honestly, we should have gave you 3 hours.
Yeah.
That's it, we could have just given control to Matt, and then we could have all gone off and had a kip while he just sat there and played music. Everyone would have been happy.
Talking on my own for all that time. Mind you, I'd have just set a massive playlist running and just walked off.
Yeah, well, you did a brilliant job, Matt. I know you were quite nervous about coming on, but no, you did a fantastic job, so thank you very much.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much, Matt.
And so, keep up the good work, guys, and yeah, thank you for doing this.
You're more than welcome, thank you. So I suppose we better go to a quick bumper, Mark, before we introduce our next guests.
Yes, let's do that. Let me just dig them out. They're in a separate window. I've got too many windows open like you.
Oh, yeah, no, don't, honestly.
My laptop's burnt my knee.
Oh, well. Sympathy will be issued at some point later.
Okay, let's just play. We are now into hour 22.